Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 134. If you're listening on drop day, it is September 23rd. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. I'm here. I'm Gordo here with Sammy and Pat. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars, all that. Also on YouTube at the WEEI channel. We got a Play Tessie playlist there with all our episodes. Go check that out and hit the thumbs up on the videos. And as always, at the socials, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Again, here with Sammy, here with Pat. Sox take 2 out of 3 in a series against the Twins, the series that we at Play Tessie have dubbed the series that was supposed to matter. Obviously, when your playoff odds get below 1%, the series does not matter. But obviously, we still watch the games. We watch every game. Like, we live and die with the team, and we're going to ride it out. So obviously watched both games of the doubleheader on Sunday, and those games certainly were good. We saw the Sox score more runs in an inning. In that third game, they scored 6 runs in an inning, and that was more runs than they'd put up in the entire Rays series before that. So obviously, of course, the second Raffy Devers goes down for the season, they start to score runs. But in the end, I mean, at this point, you just have to look at these games with a scope for, like, you're going on to 2025. Like, what can you take away? Tristan Casas looks like he's finally found his timing. Had a huge 3-home run game in the first game of the doubleheader, and then looked good. Had put together really good at bats in the second game of the doubleheader. Like, after he's taken a lot of crap and was put in, like, I'll say trade theories. It's good to see him bounce back, remind people of the player that he is and the player that he's going to be. But yeah, I mean, you're just looking at individual stuff at this point. Like, they won 2 out of 3. It's not going to change the outlook of the season. But yeah, I don't know how much we're going to talk about this, like, the actual series. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah. Sick. Congrats on 2 out of 3. Means nothing. This is not about me, but I'm sure there are people who are listening who feel the same way. It is so hard for me to watch Red Sox baseball when I know for a fact they're pretty much playing for absolutely nothing. And you could talk about, Casas got his timing back, and that is great. I'm happy to see that, but that means nothing for 2025. He's going to have months and months and months of downtime. Him getting his timing back in September of 2024 does not affect 2025. Gordo, you mentioned on Twitter, you said, I hope they finish with a 500 or higher record because that could affect spending. And I think that is the dumbest way to go about managing a team. And you still might be right, because that's where this ownership group is at. I read it and I was like, what? That's crazy. He might be right. Like, it's just so hard for me to be excited about these wins. I'm excited about individual performances, I guess, but, like, it all just feels so hollow at this point. Like, I don't even know what they're playing for. I think the most exciting thing for me is I predict them to win 82 games. So maybe I'll get a little personal thumbs up and feel good about myself for 18 seconds. And then stop caring again. But yep, that's where I'm at the Red Sox. It's really, really hard for me to be positive about an eliminated team playing games down the stretch. So sorry for being negative.
Pat, I'm going to give you a chance to give your take on everything that we just talked about. But I do want to touch up on the tweet that Sammy mentioned, because, and I'll read it off here. I said, the Red Sox are 78-78. Catastrophic things would have to happen for them to not beat their 78-84 record of the last 2 years. I really do think finishing above 500 plus showing that they're ready to contend is more important than the better draft pick they would get by losing. Sammy basically said the same thing that he said right there. And and basically saying, well, I'll just read the tweet. Who cares? You said, I hope they finish about 500, but if 82 wins compared to 80 wins dictates how they operate in the offseason in any way, I might replace my morning coffee with some. I've never heard this
Ipecac.
Word.
Ipecac. It's like when you, it's like if you accidentally consumed poison, you would be fed Ipecac and it makes you vomit instantly. It's disgusting. It's
oh,
to puke.
I gave that to my dog as a kid when he ate a bird. So exactly. I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. So yeah.
I would rather if the Red
you'll
Sox,
do that.
If that dictates how they run the offseason, like 80 wins compared to 82, I would rather drink Ipecac.
Yes. And you said, as you said here, I don't even think it's a crazy theory. That's how pathetic this ownership group has become. And to which I responded, and this is my true opinion here, is if you watch the games, and we've all watched this entire season. If you listen to this show, you've watched the entire season and been listening to us. And we all believed, we sat there at the All-Star break and we believed that this season was different than the last couple of seasons. We truly believed there was a better product on the field, and that's without them actually trying to put a better product on the field. And I said, if you watch the games, you know this group is ready to compete and deserves investment. If you don't watch the games and they finish 79 and 83, you might think that it's just another blah season from a blah group, kind of like the last years have been. It just shows what I think ownership does. I think ownership, like Tom Werner showed up to Winter Weekend last year and he said that he was told that if the Red Sox had an average defense, that they would have won 9 more games last year. If you watch the games, if you know baseball, you know that that's not the case. That's just not true. So if you watch this team this year, you know that if ownership and the front office, if they put their best foot forward this offseason and actually give a shit to contend, then they're going to be a good team. But if you don't watch the games and you see that they finish with the same record as they did the last two seasons, you might think that this team is blah, just like they've been the last two seasons. But there's so much coming and there's so much here. Like I personally don't see it that way. But
isn't it crazy though that and this is what I responded to what you said, Gordo, earlier, is that it's insane that we have to have two different conversations. Like this is how ownership will operate if they are watching the games. And this is how ownership will operate if they're not watching. We're not even sure this ownership group is watching the games. How crazy is that? That's insane to me. You own the team and we're not the fan base, media. I guess technically we're media. Right? Come on, we're fans over here. We're not even sure the owners are watching the games.
I'm actually assuming they're not watching the games. That's even worse.
If I had to put money on it, I would say they're probably not. Sox.
Do we like pick a series? Should we just pick the series MVP and get it out of the way? Like,
just do it.
All right, I'm voting for Tristan Casas. He had 3 homers in the first win, and he put together great at bats, 2 walks, and 2 well hit balls in the second game. Give it to him.
Also going Casas, same reasons. Also, game one, he had a hell of a play at first base.
True.
Hell of a play at first base. So, I mean, Casas, you could probably say maybe Cutter, but I'm going Casas.
Yeah, I'll go Casas. Honorable mention to Cutter. Pivetta pitched well, too. So, thrilling. Thrilling. It's huge. Costas is probably listening and celebrating as we speak about his series MVP.
Yeah, congratulations to Tristan Casas. You never know when it's going to be the last one of these that we hand out for this season. So Tristan Casas, your playtesting series MVP for the Twin Series. To touch up on your, because I'm glad you guys gave Cutter that shout out there, because I feel like the discourse around, honestly, I don't know whether it's around Cutter or the starting pitching. I don't know if they've gotten enough love for the legitimate turnaround as a starting rotation that they've had, particularly in the month of September. But you know, if Wink hadn't let in that run in the eighth, Cutter would have gone 7 2/3 with 2 earned, and his ERA for the month would have been at 4.02. And that's so basically, here's Cutter's season. Incredible start. We all remember it. 1.35 ERA in April and March, I guess. Then he had an ERA over 5 in May. And it was like, oh, shit. Like, this guy's falling apart. But then you guys remember the Blue Jays rain out, right? Where he got that extra day of rest. And then he went out and balled in Miami. His June ERA was 4.21. And his July ERA was 3.64. He had a couple like that. Remember that Yankee start? That was in July where he was like just carving the Yankee. I think he threw like 70 something pitches in seven scoreless innings. Terrific June and July, 4-2-1 and 3-6-4. Then a catastrophic August with a 6-3-2. Now his September ERA is just over four. For a guy that I think we all just assumed because he was so far over his innings previous career high would just have a dog shit September. The fact that he's been able to actually put a solid month together, I think is really impressive. And I wonder how much of it is due to the fact that Cutter's one wart kind of, and tell me if there's another true wart you can see with the guy, but it's just that he lets up shit tons of homers, the most in Major League Baseball. Maybe it's no coincidence that as the air gets a little crisper in the month of September, and when it was a little bit crisper in the month of April, he wasn't letting up as many bombs as he's putting together better starts. I don't know, but I've been impressed with him considering that I had assumed that his September was going to be terrible just because of the career high in innings.
Yeah, I think he's really solidified himself as a legit four or five Major League Baseball quality starting pitcher, and that's valuable. And people will scoff at that, you know, say Red Sox got enough of those. But when you're looking towards the future, you want a guy like that. And also, it's hard for me to describe. There's no statistic or anything, but Cutter's, for some reason, if the Red Sox were ever in the playoffs and Cutter was pitching, I think I'd feel good about it. I don't know why. I feel like he's got something about him that
it factor. Makes me feel the it confident. Factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it factor. He keeps expanding each year. He gets wider, so that's good. You want wide dudes pitching in the playoffs, a thick gentleman. So, yeah, man, I like Cutter Crawford. I got a lot of comments recently saying, like, put him in the bullpen, get rid of him. Like, I think
that's... I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah, no. I'm fully comfortable with that guy being in the rotation towards the bottom, but still in the rotation next year. And I think the Red Sox will feel the same way. So, high marks for Cutter Crawford this year. He improved again. And who's to say whether he'll take another step again in 2025?
Uh-oh. Pat just disappeared. That's all right. But yeah, no, okay. With the Cutter thing, the thing I was going to say there to follow you was you said he's really good as a four or a five. And I agree with you on that. If you look at where the Red Sox are today, what is he? It's basically... It feels to me right now like Bayo and Hauk are your top two guys, and then Cutter, I guess, is your three, and Pivetta your four. But they're kind of like you kind of have like co twos and co fours.
Yeah, I mean the way I'm kind of looking at it heading into the offseason, the number one spot is kind of vacant, and then Hauk is a two, Bayo's a three, Giolito just because of his track record, he's had some really
good success
in the past. I'll put him at four, and then Crawford five. I still think they need to fill that top spot. However, if they aren't, I think you have to go Hauk as the top guy just because his season was really friggin' good overall.
No,
a hell of a season.
I 100% agree with you. And that's actually the point exactly that I was about to make, which is that if they approach the offseason the way they should, which is get that number one guy, because the point I was kind of trying to make is that the starting pitching staff is not in as much disarray as I think people thought it was in maybe the month following the deadline, because they were not as a group pitching well, but the majority of this season they have, and they're certainly finishing strong. And if you put the guys in the right slots where Cutter is your fifth guy and not your third guy, you feel pretty good about things. And I know the result has been good when Criswell's on the mound, but in general, you don't want that guy throwing every fifth day. Like you want better than the inconsistencies that we've gotten from Nick Pivetta this year in your 3-4 spot. And I think they clearly see something with Giolito. So I agree, Sammy, like get the ace. Hauk's your two, Bayo's your three, Giolito's your four, and Cutter's your five. And you got five guys right there that all have potential to put together at least a season or two of like, I don't want to say top of the rotation, but like top three in the rotation stats.
Yeah. Yeah. And then not to mention you get to the playoffs and then you kind of go into a four man rotation. You can move Cutter into that kind of, that remember Rick Porcello, I believe 2018, how he was in the rotation. Then in the playoffs, he moves to that kind of swingman role and he just flew with that. Like I was having this conversation with a friend earlier today about Cutter Crawford, like in a postseason scenario, not 2024, talking 25, 26. I really like him in that role. Like, I think he could thrive, and it seems like he's got the personality where he's kind of like, whatever, man, just put me in there. I'll pitch. So, yeah, pretty positive reviews on Cutter Crawford all around. Just that one rough stretch in the middle of the year he was throwing batting practice was pretty ugly, but he got over it. So I think that's an encouraging thing. He got over the bad part. So good for Cutter. Okeechobee forever.
Yeah, Sammy, you brought up a pretty interesting thing. Like, you just look at Cutter and you're like, I feel pretty good about this guy pitching the playoffs. I don't know what, I'm the same way. I don't know what it is, but I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think it's because he is so like that Pavetta in 21, Porcello in 18 mold. Like, he's a guy who can come out of the bullpen and give you multiple innings and just be like a monster in the postseason.
Yeah. You feel good when he's out there, you know, and people, I feel like people are going to, there's like a faction of Red Sox fans who are only going to discuss Cutter Crawford through the lens of that bad stretch. But, you know, I think the Red Sox know they got a guy, not a guy, but a guy.
Yeah. And like, the other thing too, is like the people who want him in the bullpen or them to move him need to understand he was never going to be a number two or three in a big league rotation.
Right.
He had to be this year. He was kind of penciled in as the three. He was never, it's not in his cards. That's not Cutter Crawford. But to say he's not a four or five is ridiculous. He is a low fours, and he went through a giant chunk of the season when he was high threes. What else do you want from the guy? He's not going to be a one or a two.
Yeah, he's your depth guy, and you should be happy with that. I think he's carved out a niche for himself. And who's to say, like I said a minute ago, he could keep improving. That's what he's done the last two seasons. He keeps expanding. What if he comes into spring training next year looking like Hulk Hogan? He's probably the best pitcher in baseball at that point. So
that's another thing that just in general, it's not just with Cutter, but like maybe with everyone on this team, is people just, I don't think, appreciate the possibility that guys can come in and take a step forward year after year. Like, you think that, like, for example, like, I'm just, and this is like, to take a completely different example, but I'm really not a fan of the at-bats that we've been seeing from Sidon Rafaela for the majority of this season. And if he's like that for the duration of the contract, it's going to drive me absolutely bananas. But I recognize the possibility, like, he's a young kid and these guys take steps forward. Tanner Houck last year was a guy, ERA in the fives. This year he was an all-star pitcher. Cutter Crawford was not a prospect and then all of a sudden like filled in 2022 and was okay. And then last year showed that he could be good. And maybe it's like people like us's fault, because like we talked about that. It might've been a Baseball Prospectus article that compared his fastball to Garrett Cole's. Yeah. And like, we talk about stuff like that. And like, obviously like it gets us excited. You know, you want guys to have,
we're pretty measured about that. Like we recognize that it was exciting to see that comparison, but we know who Garrett Cole is. We make fun of him all we want, but that guy's a monster at the end of the day. So like, people get excited, but also, I don't know. I think you need to be open to the idea kind of, and I think you a little bit alluded to this, Gordo, that like, there's a good chance that a lot of these guys take a step forward. Maybe it's a big step, maybe it's a small step, but like, Brian Bayo's 25.
Oh, he's definitely taking a step forward. Bayo's the easiest candidate of all of them.
Yeah. Look at first half compared to the second half of 2024. He's like a different guy. He's maybe not grown up, but he's shown more signs of maturity, which I think is big for a guy who's already been paid in the role. He's got the pressure on him. So that's big. Cutter Crawford, like you said, he was never a prospect. He never had the prospect acumen of like Richard Fitz. He didn't have that at all. He came up. Who did he face? Cleveland? Weren't you at that game, Gordo?
Yeah, his debut. Yeah, it was Cleveland.
Yeah, and he was kind of like we don't really have anyone. Let's throw this guy.
Never heard of him.
It's a funny
never
game.
Heard of him.
Yeah. And now he's now you can't really envision the 2025 rotation without him at the back end of it. So, I don't want to be overly positive or overly negative. I'm just saying there is a more than likely possibility that multiple of these guys take a step forward. And there's not really anyone on the team that I would look at and be like, yo, they're due to regress. These guys are due to regress. And that's the product of a very young pitching staff. Just talking pitching. When I say I don't think anyone's going to regress. Just pitching alone. So, you know, would have liked better results in 2024, but the end product kind of leaves you feeling good for the future, which is the best I can do for you, the listeners, at this moment.
A good transition here, Sammy. You say that no one in the pitching staff is due for regression, and I agree with you. The only thing pitching staff wise that you need to take into account here is guys leaving, guys who are leaving in free or who are going to be free agents. And from the pitching side, that's going to be Nick Pivetta, Chris Martin, and the guy I want to talk about here is Kenley Jansen. There's so two guys since we last talked, since we last were in your ears, was Kenley Jansen and Rafael Devers are now Dunsky for the year, both shut down. Devers, both with shoulder things. Devers, well, we can do Kenley first since that was the transition, but I want to talk a little bit, I guess, in review on the Kenley Jansen. I don't know. I'm assuming he's gone. Are you guys on the same boat? I'm assuming we've seen now the last of Kenley Jansen in a Red Sox uniform in the first game of that doubleheader where he closed out, what, an 8-1 lead? And we were all wondering, like, what's that about? Maybe it was just get him one more outing, close one more victory, and we'll shut him down from there. I don't know. But to me, if he's gone, a successful Red Sox tenure that is always going to be clouded by the fact that the team didn't have success. But he was good. Way better than I thought he was going to be when he signed that contract, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Pat. You got a take?
Yeah, I think he's going to be one that, like, you look back on a couple of years and you're like, wow, he was actually pretty good. But I think it's just so overlooked because the Red Sox were so, like, middle of the road while he was here that, not to call it saves, not meaningful, but, like, I don't think there's ever been, like, a Kenley moment, you know, because the team's just always been middle of the road. But numbers are numbers, and I've never really, maybe a stretch or two, like a week or two total in his time here, where I was maybe feeling a little iffy about him going in for a close. But like 95% of the time, I felt really good about Kelly going into games. And like, it sucks that he was here for two not great teams, but he did his job really well. And I hope someone takes care of him in free agency. I hope he goes back to the Dodgers.
Yeah, Pat, that's a good point. There really was no signature Kenley moment, like a positive Kenley moment. I think a lot of people are going to – you just know how Boston fans are. They're going to be like, remember when his back was hurting and he said he wasn't available to pitch? Like, I want everyone to injure themselves for my favorite team. I like Kenley. I think he was fine with the Red Sox. For me, I will forever – he's forever endeared to me due to his comments in the offseason, because we were screaming from the mountaintops for literally for months that the ownership needs to invest in this team. They could be good if they invest. It's absurd how they're neglecting this team. And Kenley Jansen was the only player. Kenley Jansen and Rafael Devers were the two players who said the same thing that the fan base was saying. And for me, at least, and I know that this is not shared by everyone else, that meant a lot. I like that. And I think people give him crap for it. They're like, oh, you were complaining. I don't blame him one bit. I would have complained just the same. He's at the end of his career. He's probably got a year or two left after 2024. The guy wants to win. He said before his dream is to close out the World Series, and he's never had that opportunity in his Hall of Fame caliber career. So I love the complaints that he had in the offseason. He was totally justified. He was absolutely right in the end as well. The fan base agreed, and it's crazy to me to see fans being like, why were you complaining? Like, dude, we were saying the exact same shit. So I like that. I appreciate Kenley on a personal level. He's been nice to the four of us. So, you know, I'll remember the Kenley era with the Red Sox fondly, and I wish him the best with the Dodgers, unless they're playing the Red Sox.
Yeah, you look at the Kenley era, and as Pat said, there really was not – maybe it was May or June or something of last year where he had that Cardinals inning where like Wilson Contreras like figured out how to like fuck with the pitch clock rules or something. And it fucked him up, and that fucked him up for like a few outings, and then he was back. I wish people could understand how many times teams rotate in new closers and like closer by committee, and you know, there's been, you go a full year and there's like six guys on a team with three or more saves or something like that. And it's just with the Red Sox the last couple of years, they've had stability there. They've had this that guy who he has pitched hurt. He has been pitching hurt, and he's given a lot more to this team. I know they've paid him well, but this is a team that told him, hey, we're gonna try in year one, but we're really gonna go for it in year two. And they went back on that. And that had to suck for Kenley. And I know it hurt. And he said what he said. And I'm on board with you, Sammy. Like I don't fault him for saying that shit either. They lied to him. All right. And I know they changed management, but
yeah.
Like I'm totally fine and happy to hear him say those things. And then for him to come out this year and pitch through all the shit that he pitched through, I have a lot of appreciation. If he leaves, I will have no ill will, even if the Red Sox try to bring him back and he leaves. Let that guy try to get a ring, try to close out a World Series, because I know he's got that ring, but it was in 2020 and he didn't close it out. So I know that's something he wants. And even though I think the three of us have high hopes for the Red Sox next year, I would understand if he thought that there could be destinations where he'd have a better shot at a ring next year than Boston.
Yeah, absolutely. And to add on to what you were saying, apologies for interrupting, he turns 38 8 days from now as we record. So as you're listening, he's going to be 38 in a week. So you gotta look at it from this guy's perspective. And you can point to the money all you want. Oh, this guy's making a ton of money. Yeah, he is. But he's still a human and he's a competitor and he wants to win. And I admire that. There's so many guys who just take the money and stop caring. I don't think we should criticize a guy for taking the money and still caring.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is, since he's been here, if you're a fan of Kenley, like the baseball player, Kenley the closer, remove like the Red Sox affiliation, all this stuff. He's said like several times since he's been here, the one thing he wants to do before he kind of walks out the door on his career is throw the last pitch in a World Series game. There's no better odds of doing so unless he goes to the Dodgers, and it would be a perfect kind of story. Obviously, I want the Red Sox to win the World Series next year. But in terms of Kenley, as a fan of Kenley, he's very nice to us, super nice guy, going to be a Hall of Fame closer. Go back to LA, have your storybook ending, and just do it. Thank you for your service. Appreciate Kenley's time here, but do your thing.
Yeah. So we watched the end of the Kenley era, most likely. I'll be surprised if he's back. The Red Sox will have, and we'll have plenty of conversations in the offseason about what to do with the closer role. And I'll just give my really quick take here that I know I'm sure a lot of people will want a more certain option. I am totally, 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 totally fine with them going into next year and trying Justin Slayton out there. But I know a lot of people will disagree with that. A lot of people like certainty from the closer role, but these guys got to get grown from somewhere. And Andrew Bailey said that Justin Slayton, he sees as a potential future all-star closer. I see the same thing. He hasn't walked a guy since he came off the IL. I really like what I see from him. I'd be fine trying him out. You got Liam Hendricks in house. It's not like you're left bare, but you gotta beef up the bullpen in general. And we'll have tons of conversations on that in the future, but prioritize beefing up the bullpen rather than just chasing a guy who has a history of getting saves, and you bring in a guy who is actually on the downward swing and ends up not being valuable to you just because you chased a guy who's done it before.
The only thing, it's Slayton as closer, not my top choice. I'd rather them spend on a guy like Tanner Scott, but with how cheap they've been lately, probably unlikely.
Can I interrupt you on that, Sammy? Yeah. If they got Tanner Scott, my preference would still be to have Slayton close. And I'd rather Tanner Scott pitch in high leverage lefty situations.
Whoa, wow.
That's a take. Well, okay. Well, I was.
They don't have good enough left-handed pitching to have one set as the closer, and then all of a sudden you got good lefties coming up in the eighth inning, and you're throwing like I don't know, like Cam Boozer at them.
Tanner Scott. If they got Tanner Scott, I would say he's the closer. You still need a left-handed pitcher for the bullpen. Like that's like a whole, like closer is like a whole separate thing from the bullpen for me. It's like its own job. But the thing I was going to say, though Slayton as closer is not my top choice, I would like for them to firmly name somebody as closer before the start of the season, whether it's Slayton, yep, Whitlock, Hendricks, somebody from outside the organization right now. Just name the closer so everyone has defined roles. I think that really matters in a bullpen with the relief pitchers we've spoken to. Roles matter. So whoever it is, name a closer, and if you do closer by committee, I'm drinking Ipecac every day until a closer is named. I'm just going to puke all the time, every day, every morning, every evening. I'll be sick, but it's what we do for the Sox.
100%. I'm fine with instilling a guy that you believe in that spot, but I agree. Don't play matchups in that role. Like, have a guy that you're ready to go in that role every single time. It's like, there's been a lot of things over the last couple of years. Don't make Sammy puke. But I mean, think back to 2022 before Kenley Jansen, how uncertain everything was at the back of the bullpen. And think about how different the last 2 years have been in the ninth inning, having that one set guy. Obviously, like, great if you can get a set guy who's done it before, like Kenley Jansen, or if you can keep Kenley Jansen, that's great too. But these guys come from somewhere. But again, you have to have a guy that knows that's going to be his inning. I think matchups matter and guys can be flexible, but for the ninth inning, that's just a different animal, and you just have a guy that's the only thing you got to tackle. But before we get to, and we'll be quicker on the preview today, obviously, with the games mattering less and less as the season goes on. But before we get there, I do want to talk a little bit about the other guy whose season is now over. It's the best player on the team. It's Rafael Devers, who I feel like it's wrong to say that he had an up and down season. The first 3 or 4 months of the year, I was saying that this was the best version of Rafael Devers that we'd ever seen. And he's been playing with the hurt shoulder. That's now the reason that he's done. He's been playing with that all season. He hurt it in spring training. And yet still, I'll read you his OPS by month. In March, April, he had 872. In May, it was 919. In June, it was 974. In July, it was 1132. It was maybe the best month of Rafi's career. Then, you know, Devers plays every single day. We talked about it, the three of us, with Bradfall on the radio this weekend. But when the team feels like they can't win games without you in the lineup, they feel like they can't afford to put you on the IL for a 10-day period. So they don't. And Devers struggles in August, a 709 OPS. Again, still maybe a day off here and there to try to get him right. But he hurt that shoulder again right before the trade deadline in Colorado, when we all thought he died on the field and then was apparently okay. But like, really, like, you don't go down like that and be okay. And it was clear, like, he was never quite the same after that. So yeah, 709 OPS in August, and then in September, 496 OPS. It clearly got the best of him. It sucks because I really did feel like this was going to end up being Rafi's best season of his career, and it will not finish. It did not finish that way. I think he's had a couple seasons overall where he finished with better numbers. 2019 and 2021, the numbers are better, in my opinion. But I wish we could have had a healthy Rafi start to finish, because obviously the offense cratered in a huge way when he couldn't hit anymore and when Duran couldn't hit anymore. When those two guys fell off the rails, the team fell off. And granted, the team was like hanging on by a thread anyway, but then those two fell off and that was that. But hopefully Rafi, no surgery needed, has a healthy offseason and gets back to it next year. Hopefully he comes into camp ready to go, in good shape, and get to it from there, and hopefully be healthy all year.
Yeah, we were just talking about whether or not ownership watches the games. Do you think if they don't watch the games and then they look at Rafi's numbers, do you think it would be a good thing? Because they'd be like, this guy's not that good. We really need to supplement the offense. Like, they don't have the context that he was playing hurt. And let's buy some players.
If they thought that Rafi was going to be bad next year, they would say, well, we're not going to win if Rafi's bad, so what's the point of even spending?
Yeah, probably.
Or they're
I'm joking. I don't actually think that.
They'd just be like, oh my God, I can't believe we got burned on a $300 million contract. We're never spending money again.
We're never buying. Yeah, no, I'm more than half kidding on that one. But yeah, with Rafi's season, talk about a guy that you gotta have watched the games to have the context on his year, because like you said, he was on pace for 40 plus home runs, doubles machine. Just can't say enough good things about him. And then the shoulder just completely derailed it. His swing just looked completely different. I'm not even in the realm of a hitting coach, not even close. And I could see with my amateur idiot eyes that his swing was not right. He just looked, it was hard to watch, man. Like, it's sad because you know he cares. He gives a shit. So to see him out there trying, he's posting, but he's not performing. It's just, that's what you do when you make his kind of money. You got to be out there. So hopefully he rests. I'm glad they shut him down a little bit early. It can't hurt. Maybe he has a different role on the team next year, like not third base, maybe DH, like I've been begging for. Gordo's shaking his head. You think, year nine, he's going to figure out defense, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm rapping at DH. I also want him to grow a beard. I think he'd get like 5 to 10 more home runs if he grows a beard, just the intimidation factor. He'd scare everyone. So, bearded, designated hitter, Rafi, next David Ortiz. That's my wish, but Red Sox are stubborn. We'll see.
I think if there's any positive spin here, Rafi played probably 60 to 75% of the season with some form of shoulder injury. So he didn't play healthy, I would say, well over half the season. And he still hit 28 home runs over 80 RBI and hit 272. Like, that's just how good Rafi is. So a healthy Rafi, I mean, you're looking at easily 290, 300 hitter, 30 to 40 home runs, and at bare minimum 100 RBI. So if a healthy Rafi is in the lineup next year, you're already starting ahead. You just got to supplement that.
Yeah. It's interesting with Rafi because he's shown the ability to play hurt, and he did it this year for the majority of the season. He was playing hurt, and he was playing well. I read you off those stats, but the swing slowed down. It was a slower swing, and he was definitely having a hard time catching up to high fastballs, and you could tell, and pitchers knew, everyone knew, and it was tough to watch. But I mean, good for him for exuding that leadership, showing guys that, you know, with the Red Sox, we post. And Trevor Story was talking about that. Obviously, he exuded leadership by making sure that he found a way to get back by the end of this season, even though, you know, the outlook of the season was looking grim by the time he was back. He made sure that he came back, and Rafi made sure that he was in the lineup as often as they would let him play. It was the team's decision to shut him down. It was not Rafi bailing out on the last whatever of the season. I appreciate him, and you know, he is worth that money. I know he's not the rah-rah leader, the vocal leader that I think a lot of us wish he would be. And you know, I think with the money that you would think he would become, but he does exude leadership. He leads by example. Obviously, I think they need to bring in or develop, probably more like develop, the next leader of this team, and hopefully that comes sooner rather than later. That's obviously another discussion for another day, but I know Rafi's not like the adult in the locker room, but I mean, he leads by example, and it's not like he sets a good example for the guys coming up in the future. So obviously looking forward to big things from Rafi next year. Overall, a successful season, especially given the context of the injured shoulder. And obviously he dealt with more. Remember, he was dealing with like the knee and the leg stuff earlier this year. So, I mean, damn. Good for Rafi for getting it as far as he did.
Gotta come into spring training in better shape, though. Remember those pictures back in like January of him not looking good? And we all laugh like, oh, Rafi looks, he's chubby, but he'll still hit X amount of home runs and BBs. Maybe, but, you know, I don't want to sound like a hardo, like, hey, you gotta be in better shape. But like, you gotta be in better shape, man. Like, I hope he comes in next year looking like he hung out with Pat Brown all winter long and is yoked.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair of you to say at all, especially since generally like the guys who are in the best shape are the guys who stay healthy. So would love to see that. But
Aaron Judge, dude, look at Aaron Judge's bod. He's yoked. And I don't want to give Aaron Judge too much credit because he's on the New York Yankees, which is a team I don't like, but the guy's yoked. And he's in good shape, and he had injury problems. He no longer really has those issues. So,
yeah, that's like feels like it's in the past.
Yeah, get yoked, Rafi. We need yoked Rafi. Pat, go move to Dominican Republic for the winter and be his trainer, and just be like, dude, just check out my guns.
we'll ignore Giancarlo Stanton in terms of the fit to health ratio.
Yeah,
it's not 100%.
It's not great.
100%. Not 100%.
Yeah, you don't need
it. It can't hurt. You know, if you
forget he said that. Forget he said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stan. Yeah. Those are for looks.
Should we preview Sox Jays? Run through it real quick.
Oh, why dude, not? The whole town is talking about Sox Jays. Of course we gotta preview it. Let's go.
All right, you ready for the fastest preview of all time? Blue Jays, 73 and 83. It's a battle for last place. Red Sox have the tiebreaker unless the Blue Jays sweep. Pitchers, Tanner Houck versus Chris Bassitt, who in his last start allowed 7 runs, but only one of those was earned. He went 6 2/3, 1 earned run and 9 strikeouts against the Red Sox last time he faced them. Just about a month ago, maybe a little bit less. Second game, Brian Bayo versus Bowden Francis. It's not Bowden, no. It's Bowden.
Oh. What?
I didn't. Yeah, it's Bowden. Bowden.
You know, yeah, no, it's Bowden. It's Bowden. I don't care. I hate this guy. Bowden. We're calling him Bowden. Please.
Brian Bayo versus Bowden Francis, who keeps taking no hitters into the later parts of games and not finishing them. Third game, Richard Dick Fitz versus Kevin Gausman, who threw 5 no-hit innings in his last start, came out of the game at 58 pitches. He had a lower back issue, but he is expected to make the start. Hitters to watch, there's really only one to care about. It is Vlad Jr., who has a 1026 OPS in his last 25 games and a 951 OPS for the season. Despite a slow start, the dude is a monster, and the dude is the soon-to-be face of the Boston Red Sox when they eventually make the right move and bring Vlad Jr. in to be the Red Sox DH of the future. The only other guy to really watch, Spencer Horwitz has a 908 OPS in his last 26 games. Bo Bichette out for the year. This team really has no names unless you care about defense, in which Dalton Varsho is a good defender. Joe, do we have a score update on the standings? This one, I believe, is still in play.
Yes, series predictions is still going. By the way, I was not on last episode. Thank you, Sammy Gordo. Well wishes on the birthday salute. But yes, series predictions still going on because Pat and Gordo each correctly predicted 2 out of 3 wins. Well, Sammy and I got thought it was going to be 2 out of 3 losses. So Sammy still leads with 16. Pat is still there with 14. Gordo's in third by himself again with 11. And then there's me with 10.
All right, I'll go first here. I think they take 2 out of 3. I think they win, loss, win. They're not beating Francis. Sorry, Sammy.
Okay. I think, remember, Sammy, if you win, series is over. You win it all.
I have the same prediction as Gordo, but I'm going to go loss, win, win. 2 out of 3, Sox.
All right. Pat, perfect opportunity for you, man. Take the series loss, gain a point if they lose it.
Or a sweep, Pat? Feeling yourself?
I mean, I have to stay in this. I'm going to go, they lose 2 out of 3. I think they go loss, loss, win.
Ooh. Okay. Right. And since my prediction doesn't really matter because I'm still in last, I will go, I'll say they lose 2 out of 3, but I'll go loss, win, loss.
All right. Love to hear it. Pat, dot, dot, dot. What is it? Dot, dot, dot. Time for dot, dot, dot.
Crystal bomb.
I'm not saying it this episode because it's cooked. Sure. It's cooked.
Sammy.
Sure. Congratulations. Yes. Yeah, Sammy, you can say it. Congratulations, man.
Congrats, Sammy.
A season's worth of hard-ass work by Sammy goes into taking home the Crystal Bomb crown. Joe, give us the score update right now.
Well, Sammy, as you said, clinched it. He did it with Tristan Casas, and Casas obviously did it in a big way. So Sammy leads with 24. But I think someone else got a point during this series. And I think if I remember the last episode, if this person got it right, it would have been the greatest Crystal Bomb pick of all time. Can someone help me out with that?
I'll help you out because I was the one who questioned the pick. You picked Romy Gonzalez, and I think it's the greatest Crystal Bomb pick of all time because there was not a single lefty starter, and a lot of shit would have to go right for Joe to get this one right, and he fucking nailed it. And it was a big homer too. Sox were down by 2, and Romy hit a 3-run shot to put him up. Just a big Crystal Bomb for Big Brave Dog. We have to figure out a way to like reward you for picking guys like Romy and getting it right next year. Like a Romy pick should be worth more than like the Raffy picks. We'll brainstorm that this offseason. We could expand this shit. Take it to new levels.
We had a couple of those. We had the Romy one. I picked Ref Snyder to not only come off the IL in Pittsburgh, but also hit a home run. Those ones should be like two pointers. We got to figure out a system.
You know, I had none of those. I had none of those, and I won the competition. So maybe.
Well, anyway, Gordo locked up in second. He's got 20, even though he struck out with Yoshida. So basically, the fight is between me and Pat for who doesn't get last. Pat got it wrong with Trevor Story. He's got 9, and I've got 7. So if Pat misses out on these next two series and I get these next two series, it'll be a tie for last instead of me just straight in the bottom of the basement.
Should we do like, I'm trying to think of like a way that we could like make it interesting for the, like, what if we like picked, what if we each picked someone else's crystal bomb? So you're going to pick someone you think that you think isn't going to hit a homer, and we can go in like order. So like, I'll pick Sammy pick Joe picks for Pat picks for me.
I like it.
Sabotage.
And Sammy, since you won, you can pick Joe's first.
What do you mean? I'm picking.
So, yeah, you're going to try to screw him over.
Yeah. No Romy and no O'Neill. Those are the ones I technically can't pick.
All right,
Joe. Wipe it out. You can pick anyone you want. Give him Romy again.
I'm picking for Joe, who I think is going to hit a home run.
No, screw him over. Pick someone you think won't hit a homer.
And if they don't, then Joe loses a point?
No, it's no losing points. It's the same shit. If you pick
Connor Wong.
All right.
I don't understand this.
Okay. So, Joe, you pick for me.
Sammy, I'm going to try to pick someone that I don't think is going to hit a home run so that you don't get a point. Even though it's over, I'm just trying to screw you over.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll screw over Pat over gladly because I need to catch him. Danny Jansen.
No, be that scary, Joe. He's going back home.
All right. Gordo, you get Mickey Gasper.
Oh, come on. All right, Sammy. So Nick Sogard almost hit a home run, and while the ball was in the air, I looked up at the board and saw that he has no career home runs. So I'm giving you Nick Sogard. If he hits his first career homer, congrats, man.
Yo, you know what's so weird?
What's up with your hair?
Yeah, I was about to say, you know what's so weird is Sammy's hair as he said that.
It's my young schoolboy look. No,
he looked like the Pringles guy.
Is when Sogard came up in like his second week, the Nesson broadcast booth said multiple times, like, here comes Nick Sogard. He's still looking for his first major league home run. And I just thought that was a really weird way to frame it. Like, still looking for his, like, that's just not what he does. Like, yeah, he is, but he's not, that's not what he does. I don't think he's up there hacking for a home run. Just something I noticed, and it wasn't just one time. It was like three or four times they said, like, he's looking for his first home run. I'm like, I don't think he is. I think he's just up there swinging, bud. So
he's trying to poke one up the middle, which he's actually pretty good at.
He is, and if he had this hairstyle, he'd be
man. All right, Sammy, carry us home.
Everyone's got good hair when you're not losing and you're only winning. Because it's time for guys being dudes.
Yeah.
All right. So this is like the 17th time the Red Sox have played the last place Toronto Blue Jays. Let's see. I need someone new who we haven't chosen. No David Price. Nothing silly, goofy like that. I need a really obscure player who has played for both the Boston Red Sox / Pilgrims and the Toronto Blue Jays. Who would like to go first?
I'll go. I don't think mine's the most obscure in the world. And to be honest with you, there's a chance he's been used. I just cannot remember who's been used. I'm going with Shea Hillenbrand. Ooh. I really don't have that much to say about him. He was an all-star for both teams, which I found a little bit surprising. And now he's a realtor.
I do. I have something to say.
What do you have to say?
Shea Hillenbrand being traded was the first time that I cried as a child about a player being traded. I didn't even like him that much. I just knew who he was. What, like 2002? And then they got fucking Byung-Hyun Kim for him, and Byung-Hyun Kim stunk it up. He flipped out the crowd. And I remember my family was moving, and the house we were moving into was being renovated. So we were staying in this like really, really tiny rental house for like 2 months. And that's when he was traded. And I remember sitting in the little living room as like, how old was I? 2002? I was, my actual age was like, I was like 7 and a half probably. And I was like, I like Shea Hillenbrand. I have his card. And yeah, so that's my memory of Shea Hillenbrand. Thanks for bringing up that disturbing, traumatizing memory, Gordo.
Before we get Pats, Joe, I want to change my crystal bomb pick for Sammy. Because I just forgot one. I want to give him Emmanuel Valdez because Sammy's the biggest Emmanuel Valdez hater on the planet.
Yes, thank you.
There's definitely a better chance. There's a better chance that Valdez hits a home run, but I want Sammy to have to be really happy if he does.
Yeah, he's great. He's got really good splits against he's not really good against righties, but he's worse against lefties. But he's also a bad defender with no speed. He's actually pretty good if you Yeah, he's good.
Trust me. All right, Pat, who you got?
I'm going with former All-Star, 17 years in the big leagues. We all know him. We all love him. Royce Clayton, shortstop.
Oh, yeah.
Played 6 games for the Red Sox, had a negative 100 OPS plus.
That's good.
Did not record a hit. Yep, did not record a hit. But good old Royce Clayton.
If I remember correctly, he had really cool dreads, and then by the time he got to the Red Sox, he didn't have the dreads anymore.
Oh, he might have.
It's hard to remember. I just remember watching an at-bat of his while I was at the Topps Field Fair.
He was a super, super highly regarded prospect in the early 2000s, late 90s, and he just never really like he was fine, but he was supposed to be kind of like Carlos Correa, really good shorts. I don't think he was a switch hitter, but still. That's a good one, Royce Clayton. All right. I think you guys know where I'm going with this. I always have the most predictable ones, so sorry if you guys guessed, but I'm going with right-handed pitcher Dennis Lamp.
Yeah, boy. Big Lamp.
Dennis Lamp. He's not dead, so that's good. He debuted in 1977 for the Cubs. and then he went to the Blue Jays in 1984. With the Blue Jays, he was okay. 149 games, so he pitched quite a bit. 262.2 innings, 4.20 ERA, and 100 ERA plus. So like average. Statistically, there he is. There's
Big Lamp. Look at that stash.
Dennis Lamp. And then, let me tell you, 1987, he was with the Oakland A's. He pitched 36 games with a 5.08 ERA. And the Red Sox said, 5.08? Sounds like a Massachusetts area code. Bring him on board. So he comes to the Red Sox, and he actually pitched quite admirably. First year, 46 games, 82.2 innings out of the pen with a 3.48 ERA and a 2.82 FIP. Overall, he pitched 4 years in Boston, 186 games, 392.2 innings, just call it 400, with 111 ERA plus. So Dennis Lamp, I love Lamp. He actually pitched pretty well, 11% better than the average pitcher over the time he was pitching. So everyone
in Worcester County with that 5.08.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Worcester County, baby.
Yep, suburban Massachusetts. That is the best pipeline to being a major league reliever.
I was also 5.08. I was Metro West, and I was 5.08.
Yeah, me too, Dover. But still, Dennis Lamp, he was certainly on the Red Sox, and he wore some pretty impressive numbers. 49, same number as the late, great Tim Wakefield, and then he switched to 15. The same number as Kevin Millar and Dustin Pedroia. So this guy was certainly on the team.
I'm going to text my dad right now and see if he remembers Dennis Lamp.
Hey, Lamp.
If we have an answer by next episode, I'll relay it. But till next episode, this has been episode 134 of Playtesty. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Before you go about your day, remember, hit that subscribe button. Rate us 5 stars. Subscribe on all your podcast platforms. Find us on YouTube on the WEI channel, on the Playtesty playlist there. You can hit the thumbs up on those videos. We really appreciate it. And as always, on the socials, at Twitter and Instagram, at Playtesty on Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing. It is Gordo here. Two series left. Thanks for tuning into this one. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.